This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Jimmy and Paul, and today we're going to be covering the Disney Plus original series, Loki. This is going to be episode 6, entitled For All Time, Always. And we dropped our instant thoughts last week, but we want to deep dive this finale now that we've had a chance to digest and hopefully get a couple more viewings in. But we knew we couldn't do it alone, so we called in the expert, Zach. The comic book guy is back at Bingetown TV, where he belongs. And this is the first time we've really talked to you about it. So I got to ask, what are your thoughts on the finale and the season, honestly?
Yeah, thanks for the intro there, B-Tags. A week to think about it. I really, really enjoyed Loki for a lot of the reasons that you guys already kind of got into throughout its run on Bingetown. And I think that, you know, to try to summarize my feelings on it as I've kind of let it sit, right? The constant struggle of these superhero shows, Marvel shows, universe shows is that they always have to tease you with what's coming, but you can't be aware that that's what's happening while you're watching it. Like if you get to the end and it was just an advertisement for another thing and not a satisfying story in and of itself, eventually there's diminishing returns right there. And that's literally, you know, in comic books as well. Like that's always the constant threat of people dipping out of like, just not a cliffhanger. Like, what is this? And I think Loki threaded the needle of like telling a complete character arc story about a beloved character in the movies, but giving him a completely different coat of paint while also like at the 11th hour swerving into something that catapults everything in Phase 4. Like It really tried to do it all and it kind of nailed it.
Zach, totally agree. And one of the cool things about the show is it's a character that we've known for years. Like how many movies has he been in? And we got to see a completely different, like, what if side of it. And I love it too. Like both are great storylines. But it's crazy. Like, could you imagine the main characters anything else? Like Steve Rogers being a completely different Steve Rogers. It's such a random aspect. And the fact that they nailed it both times is I was not expecting it at all. This show just blew me out of the water.
Yeah. Having a week to digest, nothing's changed from what I said last podcast episode. I loved it. We'll get into it a little bit later, whether I and you guys like it better than WandaVision and Fat Dubs, but you know, Paul was starting to hit it already. Like, the fact that they had 6 episodes to give Loki, who is technically the Avengers 2012 Loki, the same but more character development than the last Loki that died at the hands of Thanos, just got to give them props, man. I mean, the story arc, we talked about WandaVision and the story arc for that with Wanda, the story of her trying to get over Vision's death, the story of Fat Dubs with Bucky and now Captain America with Bucky trying to shed the Winter Soldier moniker and Sam coming to terms with becoming Captain America. Finally, just all of these 3 Disney Plus stories have been phenomenal. And I honestly would say that I think the character development for Loki was the best. I really do. And we'll get into that a little bit later, but after a week, I enjoyed it just as much.
Absolutely. More of the same. And to go off of what you said, it did a phenomenal job of giving this new Loki that character development. I care more about this Loki now than I ever did at any point in the MCU that we knew before. And that's kind of the whole reason they did this show, I think, is so that we as a fan base could switch gears and see him as a hero, someone we want to root for, which we were never able to during the movies, I don't think, maybe at the very end. But this reinvented the character, and it's awesome to see.
I've said it plenty, and I've always loved Loki. I love the character of Loki, but I always saw him as obviously a villain to start, and then more of like a foil slash comic relief with Thor. I never really saw him as being a main player, but I don't know how many episodes ago we said this. This Loki could be an Avenger one day, and I would be 100% down with it.
It is kind of funny to think that, you know, your inclination is like, hey, we've had the 2012 version of Loki for so long in our brains. Like, how can they just kind of make us buy into a, you know, total swerve in his character arc in just a mere 6 episodes? Then it's like, well, if you think about the relative screen time, like 6 hours of Loki is more time than we've had from him in all the other movies combined. Yep. So actually, they really did give it enough runway to function as its own story, kind of about, you know, not just like self-discovery, but also like, you know, questions of free will and like what it is that somebody as troubled as Loki could actually want to make them happy. And then doing that in a way that like complements the previous version of him that we've known without kind of just, you know, sweeping it under the rug, like making that subtext that you want to elevate him from that role, but making that the actual point of the exercise is great.
Mm-hmm. I've said it before. I honestly had very, very low expectations for Loki compared to the other three, just because I knew I was going to enjoy it. Like I knew it was going to be fine. I enjoy every Marvel movie. I enjoyed Iron Man 2, you know, it doesn't mean I thought it was phenomenal, and it doesn't mean I think it's not the worst, but I still enjoyed it when I first watched it, just for what it was. I knew I was going to enjoy Loki, but I didn't expect to enjoy it this much. While I have you guys talking about having a week to digest, and I know we're going to jump into major rabbit holes in a little bit when we get to Kang, let's talk a little bit about Sylvie. I want to know what you guys think about Sylvie after having a week to digest. And now that we have the entire 6 episodes, the entire season to digest and to look back and see her character development, what do you guys think of Sylvie?
Incredible. Like, Sophia DiMartino's portrayal was fantastic. You effectively really didn't get the introduction of the character, you know, other than her cameo, until the 3rd episode in. And they make her such a tragic character to the point where, like, the choice she makes in the end that is objectively the wrong thing to do, you're just like, well, of course she's going to do that, right? Like that, like just her ability to, you know, to portray her kind of like entire life of loneliness and like, you know, feelings of like your existence is a mistake and you can't have any real relationships, like that kind of festering, you know, self-doubt, I think, about herself, but like knowing that it was kind of foisted on her by the TVA and having that be kind of like a reflection, you know, she's almost in a way a dark reflection of the Loki, you know, quote unquote variant that Tom Hiddleston plays that we came to know, but in a way that's not just to move the plot along, in a way that like makes her, you know, somebody that you truly empathize with, even though, again, you don't even see her till halfway through the series. Like, just really, really well executed with, especially, you know, the Lamentous episode, like that kind of like, you know, in retrospect, that kind of slow dance of kind of peeling her back and like opening her up a little bit to kind of make you uneasy about her, but then start to see things from her view, but never really truly believing that she could like trust anybody else. And lo and behold, that's how it played out in the end. Just fantastic job by both the creative staff and Sophia DiMartino.
Yeah, Broke Loki's heart in the end, kind of broke my heart. I was so happy for them together, so happy they figured things out. And then she just stabs Loki in the back and then stabs Kang in the chest. It was horrible. But I don't know where she's going. I don't know. She like reminds me of Thanos right now at the beginning of Endgame. Like, her whole life was this one purpose, and it was to take down these people that took her life from her. Thanos' whole purpose was to get the Infinity Stones to snap. And then he did, and then he went on his farm and he just chilled. So is Sylvie just gonna like, is she gonna be like, all right, like, what do I do now? Is she gonna have a purpose?
She's gonna sit like, back, smoke a cig, relax.
Yeah,
a
bit.
Kick your feet up on the desk.
Is he going to try to fix it at all? Like, stay in that office and have, like, that little bit of power that, you know, he who remains was offering her? Like, I don't know. It could go anywhere. But yeah, I loved her, so I just want her back.
Yeah, there's still so much mystery to the character. And Jimmy, to answer your question, big thumbs up for me, too. I loved Sylvie as a character. The actress, Sophia DiMartino, absolutely killed it. You want to talk about character development? Like Big Z said, only 4 episodes, and she went from this like feral alley cat who never had anybody in her corner. All she could do is push anybody away. She could not let people close, to almost letting Loki in. And then, you know, I agree with you, Big Z. Of course, like, she pushed him through the tempad in the end. When push comes to shove, she is incapable of trusting anybody. And our Loki, you know, he had a semi-normal upbringing, as much as a god of mischief can have, so he could make that heel turn, and at the end he could trust her. He let her in, but her walls were just so high, you know, she just couldn't have that aha moment yet. And, you know, we know we're getting the season 2. Where the character is, I want so much more. I want to know everything about her. We still don't know what the Nexus event was. Yep. Which I would be curious to hear what all of our thoughts are on that.
And I've got to say, like, while I think that there was likely a Nexus event, I think now that there is an actual chance that Ravonna just didn't know what it was because she was just following He Who Remains orders and didn't care. And that just got so much deeper to be like, not only are you like a cosmic mistake and you shouldn't even exist, like, I can't even be bothered to worry about why you shouldn't exist. Like, that's how insignificant you are. And even though I do want to know what the Nexus event was, just to kind of show how like damaged she is, that works so well for me in this series.
That was the scene where she said, I don't even remember where. Yeah. I just knew Renslayer was bad.
Yeah,
exactly. It was still up in the air. Ooh, that was terrible.
And like, yeah, it's just a tragic element of like, you know, she has been alone running from apocalypse to apocalypse literally her entire life. She has every reason to want to, you know, kill the one who created the TVA. She does. And then what she get for it? She's alone again. So it's like, you know, her arc just was just one of those ones that makes perfect, like, tragic character sense. And then once the kind of like stakes are laid bare, you kind of have a feeling it might go that way. And then when it resolves, you're like, well, of course it had to happen that way. And those are always the best, that are both surprising, but also, you know, really couldn't have gone any other way when you kind of step back and think about it. And it kind of just plays too into like, and we'll talk about this with Kang, like, the whole idea of the variants. Like, I like when they kind of lean into as crazy as they can get with an alligator version or a classic version of Loki. Every variant has some overlap of the characteristics, kind of like the quote unquote, you know, prime version of the character, but the dials are kind of turned, you know, one way or the other. So like that element you know, being wronged, you know, that Sophie felt, like, our Loki felt that too, knowing that he was, you know, not truly loved by Odin and, like, you know, a frost giant, but, you know, maybe hers was kind of cranked up to 11 because of circumstance, rendering her incapable of, you know, coming to a solution that benefited both of them. And, like, you know, when He Who Remains is talking, like, hey, there's other versions than me who want to just conquer. They don't want to try to set things right. So, hey, they all have this kind of pomposity and like intelligence about them, but I'm the one who's just trying to do the right thing and not necessarily get all the grandeur. So just like the different elements of the different variants, making them react in ways that drive the plot forward, but also kind of hold true to each character, I thought was also just really well executed.
Brian, to jump back to, what do you think Sylvie's Nexus event was? We talked about it in episode 5. Jimmy, you kind of blew my mind with it when we were talking about it. Showed her being a little girl playing with the Pegasus. Turns out, you know, she was probably playing with a Valkyrie. And then,
yeah.
And that kind of made perfect sense. Like, her Nexus event was probably being a woman, being a female Loki. And, you know, chances are, if you're raised in Asgard, you're like a female warrior like she is, like, maybe you don't want to take the route that Thor's friend, which made an appearance in Loki, and I can't remember her name right now.
Yeah,
Sif? Lady Sif.
Lady Sif, S-I-F.
Yeah, okay. So, like, unless you're like Lady Sif, you're a female raised in Asgard, you're going to be a Valkyrie, and that's like opposite of Loki completely. So I totally think that's what her next event could be, and I love it if that's what we get in season 2, if we do ever get it.
Zach, I actually have a question for you, because right when this character was introduced, obviously they named her Sylvie, which in hindsight kind of seems like a misdirect to try and mix her up with the character that Jimmy told us about, Sylvie Lushton. What were you thinking as this series was progressing? What similarities does Sylvie in this show have to the character of the Enchantress, Sylvie Lushton? And yeah, is it, am I saying that right? Lushton?
Yeah. I think this is the MCU doing a mashup. Like, I think watching the end of episode two, just purely looking at her, you know, well, the cast and also like her costume, I think just like, oh, okay, if we're going to just, you know, go through my Rolodex of like four villains, like this must be the Enchantress. And then, you know, like the choice they made to almost make the entirety of episode three kind of like a bottle episode on Lamentis. Like, when that was over, you're thinking like, well, there's only six episodes of this. Like, they really, the whole premise of that was that she's a Loki variant. Like, and you have to take that at face value for that episode to land. Then she really can't be a comic, you know, approximation of the Enchantress. You know, they're kind of using her aesthetic to move forward this other plot. And I think it just turns out that that's what it was. And, you know, the Enchantress isn't some character that's so important that you can't, you know, remix her a little bit. So I thought it worked out to her advantage.
Yeah, I talked about it a little bit on the finale episode. I was saying it's so cool how they're getting these characters and they're mashing them up. You know, so rewarding as a like first-time viewer, just a casual Marvel fan, it's something that you're not expecting. But as, you know, the diehard comic book fans, the people that were raised on the source material, it's also cool because they don't really know what's coming. So just wondering, how do you feel about the mash characters? Do you think it's rewarding, or are you upset that it's like swaying from the original?
I think, like, you know, no matter how much I'll try to think of myself as like, you know, being objective about these things, like if you're a comic book fan, you just have some characters you like more than others. So I can sit here and go, oh, that's fine for Enchantress, or spoiler warning for Black Widow, that's fine for Taskmaster. But then if they do it to Wolverine, I'm going to go, oh, that's terrible. What a betrayal, right? So I think it kind of depends how quote-unquote A-list the character is in the comics, in my approximation. But if they do what you said, Paul, the right way, you kind of get to keep both fan bases entertained, because it's not just like, you know, a straight read through of a story arc where the comic fans know exactly what's happening next. But your ultimate service has to be in favor of the watcher who's a little bit more casual as far as the comic background, because there's far more people like that than there are diehards. Like, and if the story doesn't work for them, then I don't care how great of your pastiche to this random, like, you know, Len Wein comic in 1982 was. Like, nobody gives a shit, right? So yeah. I think they know what they're doing there. And yeah, I like Sylvie a lot.
Yeah, Paul, going back to your talk about the Nexus event and Sylvie being a woman, and that's what it could have been. Like you were saying about like her being a woman and her idolizing the Valkyrie, Renslayer herself brought up to our boy Mobius early on, I believe it was episode one or two, saying, you know, Loki on the sacred timeline is who we need him to be. He is the god of mischief. He's a POS pretty much, you know, he's arrogant, he's a backstabber, this and that. If Loki, Lady Loki, Sylvie would have became a Valkyrie, that would not be the Loki that would fit on the sacred timeline. And maybe that is why she was having a Nexus event. The other thing is, it's hard to like think about knowing the end of this episode, knowing as long as Kang or He Who Remains isn't lying to us, he said he knows everything, or he knew everything as it was happening and how it was supposed to happen. And he said he went through these timelines. He went through the scenarios a million times, a billion times, a trillion times. And what did he come up with? It has to be Lady Loki, and it has to be Loki, and that has to be the end game, or he has to die. So for all we know, it could have just been like, he knows that Lady Loki has to start her path right here to get to him. And he calls Renslayer and he says, here's the next event. Go get her. This is when it needs to start. So that could be literally nothing except Kang saying, go get her, you know?
Right. Like, if Kang is operating through, you know, the quote unquote timekeepers, whether it actually calls a branching path or whether it's just Kang, something Kang deems to be not what is going to keep them on that ultimate path, what's the difference in the TVA's eyes? It's still, you know, grounds for them pruning somebody.
Right.
The funny thing about her Nexus event is that now that the TVA is busted and the timeline's broken and nobody's policing Nexus events, she kind of has this freedom and nobody cares what her Nexus event is. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't even find out what it is.
Yeah.
Paul,
yeah.
In my head, I actually agree with you. I buy into that. Her Nexus event might have been that she was a girl. I'm curious to see now that she has this quote unquote freedom, if she'll return to Asgard and try and find out who she was supposed to be or who her family is or something. And we could visit like this alternate version of Asgard.
Yeah. It was a quick line and it was mostly a joke, but the one line where our Loki is talking to the other Loki saying like, you know, is somebody out there. It's another version of us, but it's a female Loki. Have you guys ever seen a female Loki? And they're like, no, it sounds terrifying. Like the fact that it's so rare, and that little line right there, they've never seen one, you know, it makes me think that is a high possibility.
And before we move on, guys, I asked Paul and Brian, and I want to ask you, Zach, was there any time throughout this series, whether it was before when she was cast, the rumors of there being a Lady Loki, or any time at all during the 6 episodes, was there any time that you thought that she may take Tom Hiddleston's place as the Loki of the MCU going forward? I mean, we lost Black Widow, we lost Iron Man, we lost Cap. It wouldn't be crazy to lose Tom Hiddleston's Loki and have a female take the place.
I absolutely had that, maybe not expectation, but thought crossed my mind of like, maybe these Disney Plus series are all just purely a means for handing off mantles and here's another one.
I mean, exactly. That's what we're assuming is going to be the Hawkeye series. So.
Yep.
And who knows if...
Nice surprise that Tom Hiddleston will probably be in season 2. And I can't imagine he's not, right?
Yeah, I mean, he literally came out and said, I'll be Loki forever as long as they'll have me. So
well, there you go.
Yeah, and I'm down with that. I mean, Anthony Mackie said, I foresee being Cap for another at least 8 years or something or whatever. So, hey, I'm down with all that. All right, well, let's get into the crazy shit right now. He Who Remains, hashtag He Who Remains, guys. He never says it once. He never says his name is Kang. We talked about the script that he was reading where it said Loki's variant identification number on the script. And then it said me whenever He Who Remains was speaking. So there's never the confirmation, but everyone assumes and we have to be thinking that we're correct that Kang has joined the MCU. Zach, what were your thoughts on Kang actually coming in when there was so many things banging us on the head pretty much from the beginning, but really like episode 3, 4, 5, 6, really banging us on the head. And we thought maybe it's another Mephisto. What were your thoughts with Kang actually showing up?
It is funny that the narrative motions of WandaVision kind of made us think, all right, they're not going to take a swerve in the last act, you know, Falcon, the Winter Soldier. They're not going to take a swerve in the last act. Everything about that I thought was still kind of in play for Loki, except for the fact that like the mystery of who created the TVA was a central enough plot beat that maybe they could do something. And I feel like I'm pretty familiar with most of the goings on in the MCU. Like I had seen the casting of Jonathan Majors in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, but that was about it. You know, kind of had it somewhere in the back of my brain and, you know, kind of forgot about it. And I didn't watch this episode until the day after it aired. I was getting crushed at work and thankfully somehow I ended up avoiding spoilers. And it's like, what, 10 minutes into the episode and the elevator opens. And then, you know, Lawrence is like, who's that? And my wife. And I'm like, oh man, they're doing Kang. Cause I immediately, you know, registered, wait a minute, that's the guy they cast for him. And I do wonder what the breakdown was of people just going like, the man behind the curtain is just some dude versus, oh my God, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you're not knowing like we are like in the know with Kang, you're literally in the dark.
Yeah.
You still don't even know it's Kang unless somebody's telling you online because he never even says it.
Yeah. Yeah. My reaction watching it through, I heard the actor for Kang was casted for Ant-Man Quantumania, but I didn't know who he was, didn't know what he looked like. So watching him, like, you know, he is to me, He Who Remains for the first little bit. But, you know, they ask what his name is and he goes, yeah, you know, I've been called by many things. I forget what he says the first one, you know, a king. And then the other one, he says a conqueror. And I was like, okay, so, you know, that has to be Kang the Conqueror now. Yep. I was really ecstatic. I thought you know, first off, his acting was amazing right off the bat. Didn't know anything about him, but he still blew me away. So I'm super excited about that, because if he's anything like Thanos was an unbelievable entertaining villain, unbelievably entertaining villain. Like, I loved him. He was a dick. He was a bastard. He stabbed Tony right in the chest and then, you know, made him die in the end game. But I thought he made a really good point, and he's one of those villains that you see the drive behind. And, you know, if this is Kang the Conqueror, who's literally just wants to conquer every timeline and be like the all-powerful being, like, that's going to be so entertaining to watch.
And Zach, before we get into this Kang thing even more so, what was your all chips on the table theory before episode 6 happened?
I thought it was going to be another variant of Loki. So, you know, it was a kind of a character study, you know, a journey of like self-actualization. Like, can you, you know, forgive yourself? Can you love somebody else? Right. So like, it had to have some sort of ability for, you know, our quote unquote Loki to play off of that, which is why I thought that that might be the beat of him kind of like coming face to face with a Loki that amplified all the worst parts of himself and outright rejecting that. And I still think that that's like a, you know, a fine story, but what we got actually, I think, ended up being even better in that the conflict between the Lokis was actually between Loki and Sylvie. And it was not one of like triumph. It was one of tragedy. And you have, you know, Kang just kind of sitting there, you know, twiddling his fingers, just like watching this kind of, you know, grand puppetry that he's presided over unfold. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah. So now Jonathan Majors, he did phenomenal in this episode. He told us all about the fact that there's variants of himself. Again, he didn't say his name was Kang, but there's variants of himself, and a lot of them are a lot more evil than this one is, whether he's telling the truth or not. So we know that there's a lot of versions of Kang. I said a couple of them in the last podcast. I also said in the last podcast that I wasn't going to pretend like I was any kind of expert in this. So, Zach, I'm sure you don't want to get too into it, but as nicely as you can, give us a little history of Kang from the comics with his different versions that we may see.
I'll do as much or as little as people are interested in. The one thing I do want to say real quick about Jonathan Majors' performance is, like, he had a job of having to do a huge exposition dump that the entire series hinged on. And he also had to like play it as like kind of delightfully playful and like a little bit insane and kind of, you know, like bored and, you know, all the different elements that he can turn up and down. And if he didn't do that well, I think it just would have been cheesy as all hell. And the entire climax hinged on that, and he nailed it. So I was really, really appreciative of that. All right. Kang the Conqueror, even for dyed-in-the-wool comic book fans, he is confusing as hell, because all the best time travel stories are, right? And even within the Marvel Universe, depending upon what era, what editor, what writer, you have some inconsistencies with the way that the time travel rules work even there, right? So trying to square every single story to work together is an impossibility. But the summary version is that he was introduced as a villain way back in Avengers number 8. So, you know, created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, like an original Avengers villain. Yeah, he was, you know, an evil being from the future, you know, not too much backstory to him. A little bit later in like the 200s issue of the Avengers is where his kind of origin as being from the 31st century and his real name being Nathaniel Richards gets revealed. Now, depending upon what story you read, Nathaniel Richards is a future descendant of either Reed Richards in timelines where, you know, great-great-great-great-grandfather or whatever of Kang, or Dr. Doom, because there are timelines where Invisible Woman ends up with Dr. Doom and is the descendant of that. He's more of an Avengers villain, but his backstory is very tied to the Fantastic Four, so that's kind of cool. And he has had many different variations where he goes back in time. He then tries to conquer. So, yeah. So like the conceit of Kang is that, he's the smartest man in the room and kind of likes to bloviate and hear himself talk and has like the kind of super villainous, long dialogue. And, you know, every single time you encounter him, partially it's kind of a get out of jail free card for the writers, but also the reality of like there being so many different variants of him, because every time he goes back in time, he then might make a change that makes the version of Kang that was already in that time then travel to another timeline to do something differently. So you have him in the far, far future where he's known as Immortus. And it's like, well, that's a variant of the one that originally came back into ancient Egypt to be Rama Tut, who I don't even know if he was conceived as an original, if Rama Tut was conceived as Kang when he was first introduced, but they had that reveal a little bit later that, oh, he was Kang all along. The Scarlet Centurion is another villain version of him that fought the Avengers that was later revealed to have been a future version of Kang. In more recent time, Iron Lad from the Young Avengers is a young version of Kang that a more benevolent future version of Kang went back in time to try to convince him to become Kang earlier to stop a worse version of Kang. But then in rebelling against that and killing the worst version of Kang, he then becomes the version of Kang that came back to tell him to become Kang.
Oh my goodness.
You know, there's a lot of that kind of thing going on. Your mileage may vary as to how much you like it. I think the character is very, very novel, because if he's written right, he's just like funny how kind of like ridiculous he is, but also how kind of scary he can be, because a lot of like the time travel stories you'll find are people kind of, oh, I'm goofing around, like, you know, Ben Grimm fell on Dr. Doom's time portal and he's back in Camelot days. Like, what a wacky story, right? Whereas Kang, it's not just that he can time travel, like he is good at it. Like, he finds joy in having these machinations that span different timelines and centuries, because he just wants to show how kind of smart he is, that he can orchestrate these things that happen in these really elaborate ways. And sometimes it doesn't land, but other times it's really, really cool. So he's just a really interesting villain, not just in terms of like what the creation of the multiverse and the MCU means for what they can do for the other properties, but just purely as somebody who they want to make a multi-movie threat. I think he's got enough like depth and like chutzpah to be able to kind of carry some of these like longer term plans through multiple movies and have it be actually interesting.
So what are his powers then besides superhuman intelligence? Does he just make all of his own shit and he's so good at it that he just makes his suit the strongest, period?
Yeah. Like, he may have powers in different story arcs because of him going to this time and discovering this technology from this ancient race that lets him do this, that, or the other. But he's just a man at the end of it. Like, he is a super genius, and he, depending upon which version of him, he has traveled through time enough times to, you know, age himself, you know, thousands of years over. Or sometimes you run into like the younger variant of Kang, like Iron Lad. But yeah, he's just a dude.
Do you think it's a possibility that, like, we already know he's going to be in next Ant-Man movie? Do you think that Kang could be a different variant of a Kang we may see in, you know, the next Avengers film?
I think that's a certainty. I think like the specific version of this Kang that we saw as He Who Remains is dead. And yeah, we're going to see a variant of Kang or multiple variants of Kangs as things progress.
And I was reading online that people were actually thinking that if you had to put a name on this Kang, that this one may have been the Immortus version. What do you think about that?
It could be. I mean, I think he said that he, if I recall correctly, he said he himself was from the 31st century. Mm-hmm. And the quote unquote, like, Kang Prime was from the 31st century, but then discovered the technology to be able to go back in time. Here's a paradox for you, because he came into contact with another version of himself who was Kang the Conqueror that he didn't know was himself, that he got the technology from. There's a whole lot of that kind of thing going on. You're like, which one did, like, the answer is they both did. So he could be either side of that coin.
Okay. So Zach, you're telling us all this and you're explaining how actually confusing it is. So you were telling me off podcast that this is kind of, whether you want to say ballsy, weird, you know, some kind of a move by Marvel that it'll land probably just because it's Marvel. But with all this confusion, how do you make this happen in the right way where casual fans can just sit there and realize they're, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean they have to go see a popcorn movie, you know, and we don't want them to think, but at the same time, they don't want, you know, Christopher Nolan or something.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like so I think we are at the time where it's no longer just kind of like this high sci-fi navel gazing, like Donnie Darko style time travel stories. Like there's enough pop culture, Doctor Who type stuff where, you know, Lost, like your average viewer is aware of time travel stories to the point where it's not off-putting just on its face. Right.
Right.
So then, okay. So you clear that hurdle. Now it's a question of execution, and time travel is the ultimate. If you do it well, it's awesome. If you do it poorly, it's dog shit. So you really need to be like, I think why it's ballsy is that if you think about like Marvel versus DC, like the multiverse is really a staple of DC. That is like one of the most famous stories is like Crisis on Infinite Earths, right? The whole concept that there's different versions of the superheroes is kind of like baked into the DNA. Marvel has had storylines dealing with the multiverse because you got 70 years of comics. You're going to try a bunch of different things, but it's never been as central to, you know, Marvel has always like been, yeah, we can do these crazy stories, but like, we want to be the world outside your window with a twist. Right. So if you're really, really leaning into the cosmic stuff, because you like what kind of storytelling opportunities it affords you with like, oh, now we can get Andrew Garfield in here and we can pull the X-Men in. Like, I'm not saying this is what's happening, but I can just see like, you know, the people counting the dollars going, oh, this is phenomenal. This is just a springboard to do whatever we want. And it can be, it can also be the way to fuck everything up. So like, you really need to very clearly establish how it works. There's all kinds of superhero rules and logic that you can hand wave, but this is not one of them.
Yeah, and I will say that there is big news out there that Kevin Feige and Marvel have been having specific meetings to see to talk about how this multiverse is going to work and to make sure it's going to make sense.
That's the level it needs to be, because I mean, you got inconsistencies in the way it works in Marvel Comics itself, so you better have a unified approach to how time travel and how multiverse, because we're not like, there are no quote unquote variants anymore. If the sacred timeline was not some inherently occurring thing and just, you know, the doings of Kang, like you can have 20 different versions of any character jump on the screen at the same time. If you just are, you know, trying to go crazy with it without worrying about how you put the genie back in the bottle.
My last big question for you, Zach, about Kang is, do you see him as a Thanos, or do you see him as like maybe a phase 4 villain and then phase 5, you know, we'll move on? You know, Thanos was 1 through 3. I mean, he was there underlying for 10 years. Do you see Kang being something that big, or do you just think he'll last multiple movies, but he's not going to go that long?
I could see him maybe going that long in terms of like raw runtime, just because of how much content we get these days.
Yeah.
But actual like number of years, I don't think anything will, because it's just a different kind of, you know, streaming landscape these days. Like, like what Marvel did with phases 1 through 3 was very much like of a time that I just don't think will ever be repeated. I don't even think that they're going to try to one up themselves. They're going to try to do it differently.
Right.
If you just think about like, is he a big enough bad to kind of like, you know, hold Thanos's jockstrap? Like the truth of the matter is, if we're being real honest about ranking our favorite Marvel villains, I think most people are going to go through Spider-Man's Rogues Gallery and the X-Men villains before they really start getting into the Avengers villains. I mean, I love Thanos, but like, who are the biggest Avengers villains, right? Thanos, Kang, Ultron, like they're all pretty cool. Then you start getting into like, you know, really kind of, you know, second tier stuff like the Wrecking Crew. And it's like, you know, there's really, if they want every big bad to be an Avengers originating bad guy because of, you know, whatever the rights are with Sony and because they're not ready to introduce the X-Men yet, then yeah, Kang's as good as any.
Kang versus Thanos with an Infinity Gauntlet. Who wins?
Well, if they go to the null time zone, then Kang wins, because the Infinity Gauntlet are just stones are just paperweights there, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Kang just keeps changing the timeline so that he messes with Thanos grabbing the stones. all right. I mean, do you guys have any other Kang thoughts before we start getting into talking about the rest of the show in general and the series in general?
No, I just agree with what Zach was saying. You know, it's awesome that you're doing you know, time travel, but you got to do it right. You know, we talked about it in WandaVision. You have to establish what the boundaries of this power is. Like, you know, with magic, we're like, okay, there's basically no boundaries because it's magic. But at the same time, you know, how are you giving Ralph this necklace that's going to give him the powers of Quicksilver? That just like inherently doesn't make sense. So I'm excited for it. I think they've been nailing it so far in Loki. I just hope that they stick with the consistency, because consistency is what makes good franchises great.
Yeah, the first step was sticking the landing in season one of Loki, and they totally did it. So I trust them going forward. And I mean, they had pretty much like a 15-minute exposition dump, like you said, of Kang just explaining. And I think they did a really, really good job with that. How cool was that little animation of his that came out of the temp pad and was just showing off? I thought that was so cool.
I love how like the timelines also circled around him, because like literally and figuratively, everything he does makes it kind of go back around again around his actions.
The world literally revolves around him. Yeah, if you guys don't mind, I want to talk about someone who didn't seem like the most major of characters, but Ravonna Renslayer is one of the characters that I had so many question marks about since episode one. And she left through the temp pad armed with files that were given to her from Kang, assumedly, because Miss Minutes said, you know, he thinks these will be more useful. So she was given some piece of information and then sent on her way. And she also said to Mobius, I am going in search of free will. But earlier in the conversation, she said only one person gets free will, and that's the person in charge. So is she trying to take the path to locate the ruler of the TVA? Would she run into Sylvie then?
I think you're onto something there too. Now that you say that too, like, I think this might be the part of the podcast where we actually try to get into the dynamics of like how this works. If you guys are good with that, like,
okay, do it. Like, let's do it.
All right. I'm going to give this a shot here. All right. So Kang presents them with a choice, and it may actually be a false binary, right? Like, right. We do know that they are at the literal end of time. But we don't know that the only two outcomes were necessarily they take over for him or they kill him. That was kind of how he posited it. But like, what we do definitively know is that after his death, the multiverse gets created, except for the fact that there must have been it's like, whose past are we talking about here? But like, the multiverse already existed as the normal state of beings, normal state of things, given the machinations of the other versions of himself that he already defeated and then get it back into the state, right? So presumably he gets to like that moment where now he doesn't know what happens, because he ran through the scenario with varying levels of success enough times to where like, okay, this one's completely off, all right, now I got one Loki, but that one sucked. Like, he kept doing it until finally he said, okay, now these are the two. And then I come up to this point where that the last time this happened, I time traveled, but this time I didn't. Therefore, I actually don't know what's happening now. Like, that was my read on how that works. Right. Did you guys agree?
I agree.
So yep. Like, so if that's the case, then whoever is in these branches at the time the multiverse is reintroduced, right? The people that were in the branches that already, like the small deviations that were kind of kept in check on the sacred timeline, right? They stayed intact, but the other branches that had been culled by what he had done previously came back. But the TVA is in the null time zone that exists outside of time. So I don't think at the very end we get like I don't think the Mobius we know exists anymore, because I think he was actually overwritten. But they were very conscious to make Renslayer go through a portal to go out onto one of the branches, because they wouldn't just give her that final scene of stepping away to then just erase her like that version never existed, right? So if she's going towards Sylvie and the TVA got kind of reset, but the other branching timelines didn't, that could make sense.
Okay, so you're actually saying here that Sylvie pushed Loki back to the TVA. Our actual theory was that she messed up, or the multiverse kind of screwed it up and he just went to the wrong timeline. So you're saying she sent him through back where he was supposed to go, but it's rewritten because everything got screwed up.
I think she sent him, like, quote, back to where he's supposed to go. But if the TVA exists outside of time, and then she killed Kang, which made the multiverse happen, which means the multiverse already happened in the version of the world where the TVA could then go and not have to prune the branches anymore, because they can't be pruning the branches if Kang is dead, because Kang never told it. Like, she sent him back to what she thought was a place that doesn't exist anymore because of the way the TVA exists outside of time.
So basically you're saying that you ruined our lives telling us that our boy Mobius is gone.
Hey man, I mean, that was, to me, that was my read on the gut punch ending. Is like, not only is it bad for Loki that Mobius doesn't know who he is, but I think we lost that version of Mobius too.
Okay, so my thing was actually, I was like, wow, what a freaking coincidence for Marvel that B-15 and Mobius just so happened to be talking in a whole different timeline. But they were talking last time we saw them, and if it's rewriting the whole thing, they're still talking.
That was my read on it.
Damn, yeah. You just freaking ruined my life, dude. Our boy Mobius is not going to ever be on a Wave Runner again.
It's a theory like any other one, but I feel like they took great pains to show how they were outside of the goings-on of the, quote, sacred timeline.
Okay.
So Ravonna was in the TVA, you know, before everything got reset. And then when she left and she's going to look for power, do you think she's going to a different timeline? She's going to, because Brian, you know, Brian told us Ravonna Renslayer in the comics, famously known as Kang's, you know, female counterpart, like wife, girlfriend.
Yeah, he like is in love with her, and he like lets her father run like a dominion under his in the year 40 million, whatever. Yeah.
That's awesome. So like, what are the chances, you know, she said the only one who has free will is, you know, the one who runs it all. I'm going to find free will. I'm going to find Kang. I'm going to find a version of Kang. And, you know, if she goes to Kang in one timeline, it's like, hey, I know who you are. I know what you're trying to do. I just so happened to run the TVA, so I know a lot about different timelines and who's vulnerable and where the weak spots are and where you need to prune. So what say you, we get together, and basically Ravonna is just attaches herself to the only one who has free will, Kang. So she seeks out Kang, and, you know,
I think him. she's seeking out a version of Kang that was at an earlier point in linear time in what was the sacred timeline, because if enough different versions of Kang existed that traveled around enough to then start the multiversal war, some number of them landed in the, quote, sacred timeline at different times. So she's going to try to go find that Kang to now change what happened in the future, except that that timeline she's on now just branched off because of what happened. But also because of what happened, that timeline was always branched off because, well, maybe one of the other Kangs that now could do something because that Kang's dead went back further in time and branched it off further. So who, you know, she's off in God knows where and like the cosmic map of what's happening. But I think she's looking for Kang.
A branch and a branch and a branch. And she's going to poke a hole in that condom. And then she's going to jump forward in time when the baby's grown. And then it's going to be a whole family takeover.
There you go.
Nailed it.
All right. Oh, yeah. I was going to bring this up later, but we might as well talk about it now because we're getting into this kind of stuff. So there's a theory on Reddit about, Zach, you already kind of talked about, maybe he wasn't telling the full truth. There may not have just been two options here. He's saying, one, Sylvie and Loki take over, or two, you kill me and you start the multiversal war, right?
Right.
He was saying at one point, I don't know what's going to happen next. And he had some phenomenal acting where he was like, oh shit, what's happening? You know, what's going to happen? The Reddit theory was, what if he was lying in a way where, what if he did know what was going to happen next? And he was kind of manipulating the situation where you do see when he says, I don't know what's going to happen next, he specifically pushes the temp pad to the edge of the table so that Sylvie can get to it when she needs to get to it. So look at Brian's face, baby. Look at that face.
Okay. Well, you could say it was intentional, or you could say it was just pushing it there to like relinquish power. Like, yeah, no, okay, well, if I have this, I can defend myself.
He was egging her on more than quote unquote are Loki though. Like so, he knew yeah. that she would be the more likely one to do it if he wanted it done.
Yeah. So obviously when we say it's a theory because it can go either way, Brian. And I am still on the point where I agree with you, but the end of the theory says, what if he pushed it towards the end of the table, knowing that that's where it needed to be, that so she could grab it and stab Loki in the back and get to this point, knowing that the original multiversal war may or may not have happened, but he wants the second one to happen so that all these Kangs can finally take over and whatever, because he's a part of the Kang squad, you know, the Citadel of Rick. So like, if that's the deal, he did know what was going to happen next. He pushed the tempad, Sylvie backstabs him. She kills him. He says, I'll see you later. And now the multiversal war starts and Kang's back on the throne.
Here's the thing. I'm like pissed because, yeah, I buy into that. Why the hell not? Jim, I've said it before. You're good for like one brain melting theory on all of these MCU freaking episodes. It's awesome, though. Yeah, 100% I could buy into that. But when I was reading the episode as it was going, no, I didn't catch that. I thought he was just relinquishing his power. But that would be consistent with what I know about the character of Kang.
I wouldn't put it past him. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, you could take what he says at face value, but everything about that introduction is kind of, you know, tilted enough where he could definitely be an unreliable narrator. I don't think going down that path is like out of line with the kind of Kang stories that are very commonly told. And I also just think kind of like, if you think too hard about, he's at the physical end of time. If you think of time as like a line, right? So like, this is a world weary, tired. So all right, let's look at the two different options. If we take what he's saying at face value, where he is benevolent to a degree in that he wanted to put a stop to the versions of himself that knew what he knew, that had the ability to time travel like him, but wanted to do more nefarious things with it. And the way he saw fit to do that, to stop the variants of himself from ever manifesting and, you know, presumably variants of anything else that could potentially challenge him, was to make the sacred timeline. If we take that at face value, right, that he's been orchestrating this for a really long time, and he seems kind of like the kind of, you know, the Kang is the kind of person that he wants the glory. He wants to be revered. He wants people to know how smart he is. And we could look at this as kind of like, hey, he's at the end of the world. Nobody even knows that he did this big heroic sacrifice. Like, what's in it for him, right? Like, eventually, even though he's a time traveler, he's going to die of old age. And then what's to stop another version of himself that is on a more slowly branching out timeline, you know, in the absence of him giving direction to the TVA from going and doing the same thing all over again, if he thinks that inherently some evil version of himself is always going to challenge him, right? Like, so, okay, there's the charitable reading of why he may just want to be like, look, I just need somebody to take my place, you know, straight up like Lost style, trying to find a guy to protect the island at the
end.
Somebody's
got to press the button, man.
Somebody's got to press the button. Somebody's got to do this instead of me and keep it going. We could give it that read. But like, if we're to take that at face value, then like you said, Jim, like, okay, so the multiversal war already happened and he was the last Kang standing and he vanquished those Kangs and pruned those timelines, right? So that there was only like this one version of himself remaining. Then like there, if time is, if you think of it as like being linear and not the circle around him, it's like starts off with one timeline, naturally occurring, branches off into more and more and more and more and more and more until it hits a point where it then goes back to one, because like, oh, here's the first multiversal war on the chart, and here's where he stopped it. And here's all the lines of him jumping back in time X number of times to fight this version of himself and fight that version of himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I think I know where I'm going with this, but bear with me here. So like, if those previous naturally occurring branches existed in the quote unquote past in linear time, right?
Right.
But the entire ability for those branches to now form is only in a reality where the TVA either doesn't exist or is not being given the same directive because this Kang is not there to do it.
Right.
then doesn't it like circle back around on itself? Or like, well, these previous branches are like, they always happened. So if somebody from one of the branches now travels into the future, because one of the Kangs in the further future traveled into the past, it's not like they went away and they never existed again, because you were they kept trying to naturally occur and right. You were kind of keeping them in line. And as soon as like he dies, it's not like, oh, like they're watching from the end of time. Look at these branches form. But as soon as Loki goes back in time, he's in a version of the TVA where there's been millions of branches and there always has been, and there never right. hasn't been. So does that mean that the Kang that is now running the TVA like never encountered the Kang that now got killed by Sophie? Or was this, I don't know. It's too hard to say.
Right. You just fried my brains, dude.
And this is the kind of thing that happens.
Yeah. Man. Well, that's why it's going to be funny to see how Marvel decides to explain all these things, because they obviously had Kang explain pretty well in his monologue what the deal is with him. But anytime something happens with some kind of time jump, they're either going to have to show it or explain it every single time. And that's where you're getting ballsy.
Absolutely. Because if we had to believe that this Kang knew everything was going to happen because he was such a experienced traveler and had been to all these different periods, right? Then like through this Kang singular experience, he had ventured to branches that don't exist anymore because he put a stop to the multiversal war.
Right.
Right. But like they had to have existed because he had to have gone to them to get into stop. We could have created TV.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where the paradox is coming.
So now are you saying that they could bring those previous timelines back into the mix because they had to have existed at some point?
Not
so
only could they bring those previous timelines back in the mix, but Kang from the point in time where he was in that timeline but hadn't yet created the TVA, if he's now made aware that this version of Kang that did is dead because another further future one like Immortus comes back, what's that Kang going to do? Like you start multiplying them.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it was crazy where people were posting, and on Binstown TV Instagram, I reposted something similar where it's funny. Mm-hmm. It's just showing the multiverse and showing all the branches, and they're just saying, all right, here's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Here's, you know, all the different movies. Here's Sony. Here's Fox, yeah. X-Men. You know, it's just like everything now exists. Everything exists, and you can do whatever you want with it.
Now, I want to take that soundbite and propel us into talking about What If, because that is the next series that they're coming out with. And now because of this multiverse stuff, all of it could be canon.
Absolutely. Yes. So Tom Hiddleston himself has come out and said that What If, even though it's animated, obviously will have to do with the MCU. It's not necessarily just going to be, hey, what if here's the end of the episode and we're done with it. You know, certain things might have to do with the phases and the actual MCU as a whole. To me, that's crazy. I don't know exactly how they're going to do it, but you know, it's endless possibilities. And now I'm even more excited for the show.
Absolutely. That's the biggest thing that exponentially raises the hype around that show, because I know it matters. And that makes me invest more into it.
All right, guys.
The same shtick they pull with the comic book too, where it's like, yeah, it's a what if story, but Uatu the Watcher from our timeline is like narrating it. So what if, you know, what if he says that it's an important timeline to impact the current books, you know, keep reading. They can do that kind of thing.
I mean, that's the thing, because now we talked about it. This Loki is directly affecting the next at least three things that are coming out. You know, What If comes out. I feel like, how can that not just be different timelines of things happening that are the branches that occurred now that we're not pruning different branches, you know?
Right.
All these next events are, you know, T'Challa becomes Star-Lord. And I think Spider-Man has, Spider-Man has... Doctor Strange's powers, I think, or, you know, I can't remember exactly what the scenarios are, but how can they not be based on these, you know, different branches? And also we know that there's going to be some Multiverse of Madness is going to be Multiverse of freaking Madness. Okay. We know Quantumania is, going to be directly affected by a Kang, and also we'll deal with the multiverse. And we already know that Spider-Man 3 No Way Home is going to have to deal with all this too. And we talked about the fact that people were saying, where's our trailer? Well, you can't give a trailer yet because you had to wait for Loki to end, because it won't make sense without Loki, you know?
That's clear. Yeah.
Yeah. So how can this not make sense that they're just variants. Andrew Garfield, Tobey Maguire, they're variants. Why is Doc Ock alive? Well, it's a different variant of the same Doc Ock, but a different universe. You know, why is Electro Jamie Foxx, but he's not going to be blue? You know, well, it's a variant of him. You know, it's how everything's going to make sense now, and it's phenomenal. It's going to be really awesome. Again, as long as it makes sense and as long as they don't kill it. You know, it does seem to me that, for me, I'm just full of excitement for the next couple movies, but I'm just wondering at what point can they stop, or does it get too crazy? Because they're going to have to obviously have a million more movies come out. And are they all going to have to deal with multiverse stuff now? Are they all going to have to deal with timeline stuff now?
I think they shouldn't.
Exactly.
Just like every hero can kind of tap into like a different genre. Like, I want Shang-Chi to be, you know, a like modern kung fu movie. I don't want it to deal with the multiverse, but you get to also have things that are entirely about the multiverse and like the spectacle of it. Right. And as long as like that becomes central to the plot of that particular project and not just like, hey, you know, we're doing, I don't know, Ironheart. And here's just random appearance of a version of Tony Stark from another timeline. It's like, well, that doesn't really do anything for me.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So how quick do you think they're going to use the cop out and bring back somebody? I could see Scarlett Johansson being back pretty quickly as Black Widow, even though they gave her I actually haven't seen Black Widow yet, but I heard they gave her a nice send off and so did Endgame and everything. They've said it a million times that they want to use her again and they wish they could bring Scarlett Johansson back. How quick do you got? I mean, Yelena Belova, I heard, was awesome and she's going to kind of take that spot. But, you know, whether it's bringing back Tony, whether it's bringing back Cap, you know, how quick and when, you know, when do you think it's going to happen?
I mean, the truly kind of like depraved thing would be like, oh, here's a variant of everything we knew, except that Hawkeye was the one who jumped off in Infinity War. And it's like, okay, I guess you could do that, but that takes a bit of the gravitas away from her. So hopefully they're not so brazen with it.
Yeah, I really hope they don't. I mean, if they do, hopefully it's like in Endgame where they just see Tony Stark's father for like a little bit for a section. I hope that like if they do that, it'll be Chris Rogers. Geez, Steve Rogers. They'll see Steve Rogers as Captain America just for like a little bit. But I really hope they don't bring him back. Then it's like, what's the point of the amazing send off and funeral and happy endings that you give him in the first place?
They confirmed that Chris Evans is going to be back, and I already brought up the fact that I think he would be the perfect Skrull, you know, like bring him back. And I mean, he's not, so technically, I guess he's not dead, right?
Technically, I guess.
You know, he's on the moon, right? So
yeah, he's on the moon.
He's on the moon, but yeah, we're going to be dealing with variants, Skrulls. I mean, it might get a little cray in the next couple years.
Zach, I had one other question regarding the comics and references to it. So this series, Loki gave us a bunch of Nexus events. Jimmy reminded us of Wanda being a Nexus being, we find out. So from the comics, what kind of is a Nexus being? We already know, you know, Wanda is more powerful than the Sorcerer Supreme, and she's kind of like the main, you know, mystic energy for her own universe.
So the concept of a Nexus being, I guess it originated in the Avengers, and Wanda is typically the example they use, but it's like, because her powers were kind of described as like hex powers, right? Like Nexus beings have a million times magnified ability to affect probability and the future than non-Nexus being counterparts, to the point where like that, you know, if you think about like, you know, one person, you know, stepping on the wrong leaf in one timeline, you know, how much ripple does that make? Whereas a Nexus being can take a single action that can warp like multiple threads throughout the multiverse, and they can kind of experience those multiple threads throughout the multiverse. They're kind of, you know, in tune with it. They're not just solely kind of locked into one time frame. So I think that kind of gives them almost like, you know, a cosmic undo button. I don't think they have this plan, but they ever decide they want to put the, like I said, the multiverse genie back in the bottle, I think Wanda is the key to do it.
All right. So we have a couple roundtable questions that we want to bring to the four of us. The first one is, are there any outstanding questions or theories that you have? So the first thing is mainly questions. What is left that wasn't answered good enough for you or that is getting you excited for season two?
Yeah, honestly, I would just say what's good with our Loki and what troubles are going to present him in this new version of the TVA. We knew how much of a pain it was for him dealing with them when he was first being processed and introduced in episode one. He is now in a position where he's going to have to try and win over this Mobius and B-15 who don't know who he is. And we know how they treat variant Lokis at the TVA. So he could find a lot of difficulties there. And he's also under Kang's watch now, not these mystical timekeepers. So the entire dynamic of the TVA could be different. And I'm kind of the belief that there is only one TVA that does exist outside of time. And what Big Z was saying, I think it just kind of got rewritten. And that is what the deal is. It's kind of the same entity, but now there is no figurehead that is the timekeepers. It's just Kang the Conqueror. And I think this Kang the Conqueror is going to be a lot less nice than the one we just met. So, and that's the thing that excites me so much about Kang is the wide range of variants that we're going to see. I don't even think all of them are going to be bad. I'm sure there are going to be one or two that are indifferent or sympathetic to the Avengers, and they're going to need him to fight the Kangs that aren't. I think it's just so fun. But the biggest question for me is definitely what's Loki going to do next?
Yeah, I love that. My biggest question besides what you just said is I want to hear confirmation of what Zach said, that the rewriting happened, and they're going to have to give us that explanation somehow.
I think so. Yep.
Because people are going to say, okay, well, where's our Mobius? Where's our B-15? The other thing I'm wondering, and I think, Paul, you were going to probably bring this up too, and Zach, you haven't heard us talk about it yet, and I haven't asked you yet. So what was the deal with Sylvie's plan where she kept sending all those time bombs through the gates, and we never really saw what happened with them except for the fact that they distracted everyone?
I mean, yeah, you guys said that on Bingetown. I'm listening going like, yeah, what, like, what was the deal with that? If it was really so scary, why were they able to clean it up so quick? I mean, like, Family Guy was like, my mother's coming for 1 week. Man, that was a crazy week. Like,
yeah,
like,
yeah. That's
right. Like, oh, man, we cleaned up all those bombs. That was nuts. Anyway.
I mean, they were showing the craziness that we saw at the end of episode 6 where things were starting to branch and they're going, holy shit. And all right. This stuff's starting to blow up in their face pretty much on the screen. And we talked about how the screen was showing all the different times and location that the bombs were going to and the branches were being shown. And we just never really got that. So I'm wondering if that's even going to be addressed or.
I think that might just be dropped. And I think we kind of saw from Sylvie that, like, okay, it starts off. She doesn't have some grand master plan. She's just kind of running from apocalypse to apocalypse, trying to kind of stay one step ahead, stay alive. And this is kind of like the first steps of her, like, you know, trying to enact whatever kind of revenge she can just to kind of piss them off. So if you want me to believe that it was just kind of like, you know, hey, she's just trying to weaken them to be able to potentially get at the timekeepers, but all she's doing is just stealing their bombs to try to, you know, set off at a bunch of different spots on the sacred timeline to have the greatest chance of causing, you know, branches that they have to go like clean up to maybe give her an opening to get to the timekeepers.
Right, right.
I'll believe that, but I would have liked a little bit, you know, more actual text about that and not subtext.
Agreed.
Yeah, one of my biggest things, questions that I just have no idea. We've talked about it. Zach, you kind of blew our minds a little bit, fried them a little bit, but what is the deal with the TVA moving forward? Like, is the TVA outside of time? And, you know, literally from the moment that, all right, let me word this correctly.
It's tough.
The timeline that Ravonna left from, what happens to that TVA? Does it not exist anymore? Or is it saying, like, you go back and it's rewritten? Is there more than one TVA? Do they exist, like, outside of time? Are they? It's just so confusing that I want them to give me an answer just so we know what we could possibly expect for upcoming.
Yeah. Now, like, thinking about this out loud, I can't see it not being what Zach said, because I can't see how there is more than one TVA based on the definition of the TVA. Mm-hmm. And if that is true, then then it can't be like, hey, we pushed you into the wrong timeline or a weird multiversal timeline. There wouldn't be another TVA there. So he's going back to the TVA. It's just a rewritten version. And now Kang's the leader.
And like, I think to kind of piggyback on what all you guys said, my question too, and I think it is one that is going to be a front and center question in season two, is like, okay, what is the remit of this version of the TVA? Like, if the multiverse clearly now exists, and at the time he now comes back in, it has existed for some time because time's not linear. And if that Kang wasn't alive anymore to stop the Kang that now can go right before he created the TVA and do something different with it, like, was this a version of the TVA that originally tried to prune and then was taken, you know, under new management and failed? Is this one that is actively trying to do something completely different? And, you know, Kang doesn't need to have the charade of the middleman of the timekeepers to have this kind of like religious element to make them believe they just follow him because he rules with an iron fist. I think they'll answer all that, but I have no idea.
And to go off of that, you know, what's good with Miss Minutes?
She
lives outside of time too, right? I guess, because if she can be the middleman between Renslayer and Kang, like, she's that version of her still has to exist, right? Because that the multiverse existed and then was contracted in the past too. She presumably existed then.
Yeah, right. Like, she's a program. So how much did she change? Yeah. Like, if you go forward in time and back in time, theoretically, it should be the same, unless it's, you know, it's a learning AI or whatever. Now you're just digging yourself deeper in a hole. Yeah. But it really was ambiguous how much self-awareness Miss Minutes had. You know, she worked for He Who Remains, but, you know, could she think and act by herself? Like, could she run away from the TVA and somehow end up somewhere else in the timeline? I don't know. If she doesn't ever show up again, it's perfectly fine with me. I thought she was cool.
So popular, I hope they're gonna add her back in, dude.
I hope so.
It almost seems as though she was a piece of technology that Kang would have created to assist himself, a la how Tony created Jarvis, and then he became a sentient AI. Yep. That could certainly be something that someone like Kang would be capable of, but be able to reel in and then have it be an ally just from the start.
I buy that. I like that a lot.
There is definitely that like mad inventor side of Kang, you know, to kind of do what Tony would do, mixed with Dr. Doom, mixed with Rick Sanchez from Rick and Morty. He's like all of those things.
Mixed with Reed Richards.
Yeah.
Someone just said Reed Richards. And this episode, I don't think we touched on it in the instant reaction, but this episode had a very unique opening title sequence. And one of the Easter eggs in that was a spaceship that flies by very briefly.
Very cool.
Everybody thinks it's a Fantastic Four reference. Everybody and their mother, Jimmy.
I didn't even notice that. And I'm convinced you're right now that you said that. it's just a very deliberate choice to put that in there.
Yeah.
I mean, they had quotes from almost every character from the MCU in the opening scene, and they went real deep. So I wouldn't be surprised if we were getting introduced to some of the, you know, the big lines, secret lines they threw in there. Those characters are going to come back and make a big appearance.
It's cosmic rays, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, let's do it. Where's Galactus at, dude?
He's coming, don't worry.
All right, guys. So we talked about our outstanding questions. Let's finish this off strong with a series grade for Loki. We'll do like we did for WandaVision and Fat Dubs. We'll do letter grades. I don't remember exactly what everyone else put for their letters. I believe I remember mine. So let's get this party started. Brian, we started with you last time. Let's do it.
Oh, started with me last time, so start again. I would have thought I got to go last, but...
Brian, we started with you last time. You get to go last. Big Z, you're up first.
Nah. Luckily, I'm locked and loaded with my answer. So I didn't cover WandaVision with you guys, but I enjoyed that a lot. I would have given that a BB+.
Okay.
This, however, I've said it before, was similar to WandaVision, but just nailed it all. This was significantly better, so I'm going to give it an A.
Yeah.
Might as well just rate the three shows,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
While you're at it, Brian.
Yeah, our last question was going to be Wanda versus Fat Dubs versus Loki, so you might as well add that to your series grade. So what do you think?
I'll give Fat Dubs a B flat. WandaVision will give the B+, and then this we're going to give just a solid A.
Okay.
So I just re-listened to our WandaVision finale. We were pretty good.
All right, cool.
That Paul guy has a sexy voice.
He does.
But I gave Wanda a B-, I believe.
You did.
And that was because it had some inconsistencies that, you know, it just didn't make sense. And, you know, the big one that we bring up, I brought it up earlier, Agatha's powers and how kind of inconsistent it was giving Ralph the powers of Quicksilver. And then Quicksilver, you know, flicking Monica Rambeau across the room one scene. And then, you know, later that episode, she gets the jump on him and somehow he's not fast enough to react to it and takes him over. There was things like that where it just kind of, it was almost insulting watching it and having the episode and be like, you're just supposed to accept it. And it's like, wait, that doesn't make sense. We just saw the scene earlier that she couldn't do that because he was this strong. So I don't know. I still loved it. You know, B-, whatever I gave it. Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I gave it an A. And I loved that. I mean, it was so good. But there was, you know, a few things that didn't make sense. Again, Sam was going to die to Carly if not for Sharon stopping it. It's like, what the hell? And, you know, we talked about it a lot. The fact that Sharon, the power broker, gave up her golden goose, her Dr. Nagel, who was creating the super serum, gave it away too easily. That wasn't a power broker move. And then right. A few episodes later, we're supposed to be like, all right, so she is the power broker in control of everything. That didn't make too much sense to me. Loki just knocked it out of the park. I wasn't expecting anything, and it blew me away. Without a doubt, my favorite of the three. I mean, I have to give it an A. I couldn't really find anything too wrong with it, to anything that bothered me nearly as much as that from those other shows. So, you know, I don't want to give it an A+, just because I'm reserving that for something that really blew me away. But I had the lowest of expectations, and I am coming away like ecstatic for season two.
Yeah, Brian, it's funny. We were talking about that this last night on the Rick and Morty podcast when we're saying you have to rank from 1 to 10, and we're going, why are you doing decimals? Why are you doing points? Because you don't want to get too high and then not have room for improvement. And that's kind of where you got stuck at there, Paul, because if I was you and I had A for Fat Dubs, then I'd have to give the A+ to Loki, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I was a WandaVision lover, maybe apologist, sticking with my A- there. I was not on the final episode of Fat Dubs. I think that one for me is a B-, only because that was the one that I think you could just kind of tell the finale was most affected by COVID, at least to me. Like, there was just some very strange choices in that finale with regard to, like Paul said, with the power broker, like if that was the plan all along, that could have been seeded a little bit differently. The ultimate theme of, like, you know, the journey that Sam and Bucky went through and everything with Elijah was the heart of the show. So that kept it, you know, well worth watching. But definitely, you know, for Marvel standards, I think a dud of a finale. And then Loki, just unabashed A. Like,
yeah,
I don't know what I was expecting coming into this. I mean, you're coming into the third series, you're going bang, bang, bang. It's a ballsy premise. Like, if it's not entirely clear before even getting into it, like, what it's about, other than some vague time travel notion. If it misses the mark, you really run the risk of, like, people starting to kind of say, I don't know about this MCU stuff, man. They're just kind of throwing shit at the wall. And instead, it's completely energized the remainder of Phase 4. And, like, in a way that has put to rest all any doubt that anybody ever had that Disney Plus is like a fundamental component of Phase 4. Like, you have direct through lines from Black Widow driving you not to the next movie, but to a Disney Plus series.
Exactly.
And you have an action in a Disney Plus series. It's going to be the basis for at least two, if not more, movies. So, right. Like, essential to just people trying to keep up on it. Great acting. It didn't have, like, if you think back to, like, the Netflix shows, it's just like, yeah, this is just, like, 12 episodes because it has to be. And it's just, like, meandering around. Like, every episode was an individual kind of story that all felt very different. And then you just take a complete shot in the finale that, if you don't get it right, retroactively ruins the whole thing. And you nail it. So, like, not only they jumped off the highest high dive and did, like, three flips and they landed it. So,
yeah. I'm going to go with what you guys said. I said it a million times. I feel like a broken record, but Loki was the show that we didn't know we needed. And I was so low on it. And when I say so low, I just mean compared to the three that were coming out. And honestly, to me, it was the best. I'm going to give it an A as well. I want to openly admit that I am probably a little bit biased on my Fat Dubs, just because I was, like Paul said, pretty insulted by the end of WandaVision. I did love WandaVision. And if Zach, if you remember correctly, I was more along the lines of it. I believe I gave it like a B+ or something.
I think you gave it a B+. I think Luke gave it a C-.
Yeah, Luke wasn't feeling it. And Luke has been back since. So Ralph Boner finished Luke off the MCU binge down. I think that after WandaVision and me feeling a little insulted with us putting so much effort into all the theories, with Fat W's going back to the MCU formula where it was just like straightforward, we haven't had it in so long because of COVID, and it was just a straightforward story with our boys Bucky and Falcon, and now Cap, I just felt good while watching it. I do agree that it didn't end on the strongest note, but I'm going to rank it Loki with an A. Fat Dubs ranked number two. I guess I'll just say like a B+. B+, I guess. And then I'll go B for WandaVision.
For three series that are all with, seemingly second tier or lower characters that are all Bs or higher. And I've rewatched a couple episodes of all of them. So, Disney Plus just killing it.
Disney Plus killing it. Disney Plus giving us characters that are going to be relevant and mainstream for the rest of Phase 4 and beyond.
Driving up the value of some of my older comic books.
Zach the comic guy, hit him up if you want to buy a comic book off him, man.
Zach's playing chess. We're all playing checkers, man.
He's got to get those first appearances, man. You got to build your portfolio here. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Nah, for sure. Disney's killing it. And me personally, I've come to love the episodic releases. I love to say that I get excited for them throughout the duration of a week. And now that they're dropping midweek, like these Wednesday releases, it's been so fun. I watch it with my roommate. It's been a great time. But I think we just hit our series grades, so we're ready to wrap up here. That's going to be a wrap on Loki season one. You just heard us say how much we loved it, A's across the board, so you better believe we'll be back for season two, and most likely for What If coming out next month. Once again, thank you, Zach, the comic book guy, for stopping by. I'm sure that's not the last we're going to see of him as anytime. Well, and as always, if you like what you heard, give Binchtown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram. Visit us on BinchtownTV.com and subscribe to our show on Spotify, the Apple Podcast app, or wherever else you may find your podcast. Once again, we are Binchtown TV, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.